All right, we're rolling, brother. This is for Clem and Otis. All right, I'd still like to start today with a shout-out to our sponsors, Indosol. If you go to indosol.com and use promo code THT, you'll get a 15% discount. Indosol ship worldwide, and they have distributors all over the world, so you'll often get your product within a few days. Now, these guys, every week I talk about them. They're repurposing motor vehicle tires and converting them into footwear, and they've been doing it since 2009, so they're like legit. So if you go to Indosol, that's Indosole.com, use promo code THT, get the discount, and you'll be supporting a B Corp certified company, which means they meet all of the ethical and environmentally responsible production standards, and you'll be making a conscious consumer choice. Also, a big shout out to Tectonic Coffee, LA-based coffee roasters. Again, ethics at their core. It's super clean caffeine, pesticide free. They ship worldwide. They've weathered some storms, you know, this year. They've been faced with restrictions due to COVID. They weren't able to make deliveries around LA because of the riots at one stage, and they've supported their staff, you know, without question throughout it all. So if you go to Tectonic Coffee, that's TECTONIC coffee.com, use promo code THT, get the discount. Make an ethical consumer decision and you'll be stoked. All right, I've got a very special guest today. Are you ready, brother?
Yeah, man.
I'm having a good time.
You are?
Yeah.
I can tell.
We are rolling.
Terrible happy talks.
Today's guest is Kyle Parsons. Kyle is a surfer, snowboarder, entrepreneur, and founder of the environmentally conscious footwear company Indosol. And massive disclaimer, there is some seriously unapologetic product placement in this episode, and I'm so stoked to have Kyle on. But anyway, let's go. After years of working in the snowboarding and action sports industries, Kyle found a niche in the environmental footwear space and conceptualized what is now a worldwide distribution of his brand, whilst advocating for conscious consumerism, environmentalism, and highlighting the vast opportunities that exist in a secondary resource market. So today, Kyle is with me live from his home in SF, fresh out of the surf at Ocean Beach, to share his journey, experiences, challenges, and hopes for the future. Kyle Parsons, welcome.
Thanks, Brandon. So stoked to be here today.
Yeah, man. I am too, dude. We've been talking about it for, you know, for a few weeks back and forth. You're a busy man, right?
Yeah. I mean, this year, you know, it's been a lot of emails, phone calls, and you know, anything laptop-based, but man, there's never a dull moment. It's like, you know, whether there's a pandemic or it's normal world, we're cruising.
How do you personally deal with stress?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, for me, sports and activity has always been my meditation. Getting in the water super early, getting a surf in, just a great way to release some energy. Otherwise, when I'm doing my phone calls and doing business, I like to walk around. So I'm like, right, always moving, kind of a hyper person in general.
Dude, as soon as you said that, that's what I'm like. You should see me on the phone, man. I pace, bro.
Yeah.
So, look, I want to get stuck into a couple of serious things. The first one is that you told me this morning that you were going to wear a powder blue suit, and you didn't wear a powder blue suit to this podcast. Bit disappointed. But the real question I've got is, like, can you give the listeners like a bit of a rundown of the vibe in SF right now in San Francisco and America? Like, you know, how is it? How are people feeling in general?
Yeah, you know, cautiously optimistic, and this, the last 6 months have been just such a roller coaster ride, and you know, everything comes from the top, right? And you know, from my opinion, we got some pretty loose and inconsistent leadership and people telling us, you know, how to react in this thing. But you know, for us, as I mentioned earlier, it's like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And we really used this time for IndoSoul and personally to simplify our lives and to just see things a bit clearer for what they are, you know, and really being able to enjoy every day that we have to work on the things that we love. For IndoSoul as a brand, you know, for years we'd sold to mainly retail shops, you know, retail shops, anything from surf to yoga to outdoor to the natural channel. And this year we were able to really just kind of flip the model and go more direct and online with our sales and focus on that. So.
Yeah. Has it led to any like creativity and inspiration in terms of, I guess, redeveloping your image or your brand direction?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when something like COVID happens, you know, I think that ultimately the goal is for people to come closer together and for us to tell better stories and, you know, just really be able to communicate with one another. And what we found is that people just had more time. They had more time on their hands than they ever had. You know, I was getting people on the phone that I would never get on the phone in normal times. You know, it was unbelievable. You know, founders of big footwear companies are just like, oh, I'm just hanging out at home, you know, happy to give you a few minutes and chat. And then that 5 minute chat would turn into 2 hours and then we'd talk again. So, you know, there's a lot of positives and silver linings in this.
Yeah, like, can we go back a little bit? So you actually birthed, excuse me, you birthed the original concept of IndoSoul, and I've actually heard the story, but can you just recount the actual moment when you had the idea and how it was actually born?
Yeah, happy to. You know, just kind of rewinding the tape, I grew up in the northeast of the U.S. near Boston, as far away from Bali, Indonesia as you could ever be. You know, I didn't have a clue about what happened in Bali, but my dad had been traveling to Bali since 1982. You know, when the land was pure and cultural and there weren't any traffic jams in Seminyak. and he would bring me home these wooden masks and t-shirts that said Bali on them. And I'd bring the wooden mask to school and, you know, I think it was kindergarten at the time. And I would dance around the room with a wooden mask on. And, you know, I was always kind of intrigued about this Balinese culture that I learned about. And then I finally got to go on my first trip in 2004 on a family trip with my parents and my brother. And needless to say, I was blown away at Bali and, you know, the beaches and obviously the surf and the food and the culture. I also just noticed that they're just super resourceful people. The artwork I thought was rad, you know, anything from the painting to the wooden sculptures. And coincidentally, I was walking down the street one day. I was in Seminyak and the thongs that I was wearing at the time, they blew out, you know, the thong on my sandals blew out. And I was just standing there barefoot on the sidewalk and it's dirty as hell. you know, in Seminyak, and I need a new pair of thongs, need some new sandals. So I went shopping. I was like, okay, you know, I want to find a cool pair of Bali sliders that nobody else in California has, you know, maybe something with a natural weave on it. And I had a vision in my head for what they look like. So I relentlessly went to store and then found a really cool pair, and they had that natural weave on top, but on the sole, they had a tire and, you know, it was visibly a hand cut, upcycled tire. I asked the store clerk and she said that it came from a motorcycle, and that made perfect sense to me because, you know, outside the window, you got thousands of motorcycles whizzing by in a country where the number one mode of transportation is motorcycles. So anyways, I bought the sandals and they weren't comfortable at all. They ripped my feet to shreds and like they sucked. But it was, you know, it was the concept that stuck with me. And when I got back to California, I showed all my friends and nobody had ever seen anything like that before. And they're like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And all I did was talk about Bali for like, you know, months and months after getting back and how I wanted to get back there. Did a bit of research too about tire pollution, and just found that it's one of the biggest environmental problems that nobody really knows about. Each year, billions of tires end up in landfills, and they can spontaneously decombust and start fires, and which are really hard to put out because they're burning oil. They can also become a breeding ground for mosquitoes, which lead to nasty diseases like dengue and Zika.
Sorry to jump in there, Kyle. That's actually been one of the one thing a lot of people don't consider about the danger of tires is the breeding ground for malaria and mosquitoes and malaria. It's something that, I mean, we often talk about pollution, but we don't talk about that health factor as well. Sorry. So keep going.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why tires are great. They're so strong. They keep you safe. They get you from point A to point B, but at the end of their life cycle is a dilemma. You know, there's, it's even harder than plastic to break down, and there's a gazillion of them out there. So anyways, that initial pair of sandals really resonated with me. I thought they were super cool. I went back to Bali on a mission to get them manufactured, and that's when the roller coaster ride began.
Dude, so cool. It's a great story. And I know I say this a lot in the podcast. I'm just so inspired by people who, you know, find that inspiration and then actually act on it. And just can you give us an insight as to what acting on an idea looks like? So what were the first steps that you took? Like, the idea was birthed and conceived. Then what did you do? What do you start working at as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think, you know, as an entrepreneur, we can't be scared of the challenges per se. You know, you gotta just man up and go for it. And that's what IndoSol really was all about. But I will admit that I was humbled by a lot of the challenges, and, you know, it just started by being an ignorant American in Bali, not speaking the language. I didn't know the culture. I still have a ton to learn about Indonesia. But I knew I wanted to be there, and I wanted to try to blend in, and I wanted to make a difference, whatever that meant. I had never worked in footwear. I'd always worked in, you know, hard goods, snowboards. I sold sunglasses. I sold apparel. I didn't know what it took to manufacture a pair of shoes, and nonetheless from an old scrap tire. So there was a huge learning curve there. We needed to find a factory that would take us on as a customer, would help us make the product. I was doing it in a land where I hardly knew anybody. And it was just all a scavenger hunt from the beginning. But that was the most glorious scavenger hunt ever. You know, just every day we either get a lot done in Bali or you get nothing done in a day in Bali. So you have those great days and the other days are a total disaster. anyone who's done business in Bali, and I'm sure can relate. It's like, you know, sometimes you just can't force it. It's like you go with the flow.
And did you slowly start finding your people once you embarked on the journey?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Back in early 2000s in Bali, the internet hardly worked. You know, there was two cafes. You could go and get a solid connection, and if more people came to the cafe, the connection would slowly die. And then by noon, it was completely dead. So I used to show up at the cafes and try to be the first one there at the morning, and, you know, standing at the door at 7 so I get the fresh internet so I could, you know, do some research, or, you know, and send some emails. But, you know, really it was word of mouth. You know, everybody knows Wayan or Amade that knows another one. And finally I got the tip on a small little shoe factory out in Denpasar that was making a similar product that we had the vision for. So, you know, luckily, you know, for me, there was, you know, an English speaking factory owner. We started kind of going down the line and sampling, and I started just bringing suitcases full of samples back to California, saving my money, getting on a plane, coming back to Bali and repeating the motion. But, you know, I can really attribute the product development starting to move in a more positive direction once I was able to get the right people aligned and those also that spoke the language and really knew the culture, you know. So when my business partner Kai came on board, we were able to make strides at that point. Just communication wise and just in repetition and making sandals and making them better every single time, because at the beginning we faced every problem you possibly could have. They were uncomfortable. They fell apart. You know, quality control was an issue. If you run out of a color of material, they're going to sub in pink. And even if your sandal is tan, they're going to make it pink. So, you know, so it's just, there was a lot of challenges at the beginning, but again, that was all learning experience, and it was super fun.
It's so funny that you mentioned that with Bali, in terms of, you know, they'll just generally do whatever they want to do. And I think it's such a cultural difference where from our cultures where everything's so regulated and structured. I think for me personally, it was the biggest learning experience just to pull back and surrender to a different mindset.
And
also, like, I wanted to ask you about when you first started out, did you have these grand ideas of making a lot of money, or were you more driven by this idea of lifestyle? And that, hey, look, is this going to be something that can keep me in Bali, or what was driving you in those early days?
Yeah,
or was it a combination?
Yeah, great question. Just personally for me, I've always been motivated by lifestyle. It's just purely been about trying to align myself with places in the world that I want to be, you know, and around sports that I want to do and around people that I want to be with. I always had a dream of starting my own brand. I wanted to make a difference in any way that I could. For years, I didn't know what that was. And I felt like IndoSoul as a concept just kind of hit me upside the head. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. Here it is. And then I became obsessed with it. I refused to be denied. I wanted to make it happen, no matter how hard it was. The financial component, I assumed would come in time, but that was one of the other, you know, major learning curves, is that in order to start a shoe company, you need a lot of money. Like, you know, you have to develop the product. You have to have cash up front to place your production orders and get them in ahead of time. So really one thing led to another, but again, it was really about the lifestyle and about people helping people.
Yeah, nice. Okay. And also, like, again, like the whole concept, I think, of your brand is so potent for a lot of people, because, you know, just fundamentally, it's getting a motor vehicle tire, turning it into something you can wear. So from when you first started out to where you are now, how has that process changed? So I think I bought one of your original pairs back in 2010, and it actually had the cut out tire piece stuck to the bottom of a flip-flop. Okay. And I think it even had some of the tire wall in it, and it was from a Bridgestone tire or something. And it actually had the words like SAV on it, because it was part of a cutout. Like it said save on the bottom, you know. How has, from those days when you first started out to where it is now, how has the actual process changed of the shoe?
Yeah, that's a great point. And by the way, thank you for being a supporter since day one. And, you know, in a way, I feel bad for you too, because those first edition Indos weren't that great. We got in early enough, so you can really appreciate how comfortable they are now. But
I used to slip on my ass all the time.
they're made for learning the moonwalk. It's like, you know, in those things. But yeah, when myself and you know, my partners talk about IndoSoul, and we really describe it as an evolution of process, whereas at the beginning it was kind of like the old fashioned way of making footwear where everything was hand done. We started by picking tires up off the side of the road and finding them out in fields and bringing them to the factory and playing with different tires and tire treads. And we started with motorbike tires because they're the most common mode of transportation and they're all over the place. So the original pair that you had was made out of a motorbike tread, but they were a little bit uneven when you walked on. And we knew that just as scaling upwards, it wouldn't be a commercial mass marketed product that way. So we really felt like we needed to do better. When Kai moved over to Bali full time, we discovered that the sidewall of truck tires was a great way to go too, because they were completely flat, and then you could read the name of the tire, and had a more of a mystique about it, and just a charm. So we had that phase where we're using the sidewall of tires, and that lasted a few years too. But again, once you start to get some demand and people actually want your product, you need to make more and more of it, right? So the demand started scaling up and we had a hard time delivering the shoes and making them quick enough to keep up with the demand and delivering to retailers. So we did that for 6 years. It was still just kind of a handmade process, and we were a small organic brand that we wanted to put off a cool vibe and a story. But financially, it wasn't really making sense at that time. So we knew we needed a change. So the next evolution in the process was moving shop up to Java, where we partnered with an engineer and we developed a whole new process, which to our knowledge had never been done as well. And we started collecting tires through a large scale processing facility and grinding them down to a powder. So now what we have is a recycled tire tread sole combined with some other natural and recycled materials and pressed. It's pressed into a sole. And what that does is just, it adds consistency, so each pair of Indos is the same as the next. And, that's kind of the magic that allows a brand to go from being just a blip on the map to a larger brand and to getting out there into the market and delivering perfect product every time.
Curious about is like, I listen to that and it just seems like such a great idea and so obvious. Like, why aren't more companies doing it? Like, why aren't more companies tapping into these vast amount of trash resources, or as Kai Paul described, like this like secondary resource? Like, is it too expensive for big companies to make money from? Is that why people are reluctant to get involved with it?
Yeah. Well, as the old adage goes, if it were easy, everyone would be doing it. And it's just, the reality is it's not that easy. It takes effort. It's logistically challenging, whether you're going to make a shoe from a tire or you're going to make a shirt from plastic bottles. You have to figure out your supply chain. You have to develop that product first. You have to make sure it works and it works properly. It needs to be spec'd out for mass production and delivery. But all in all, Indosole is an example of a mindset, of an idea that ideally rolls over to other product categories. So that's what we represent, is that anything is possible. It is possible to make wearing a piece of trash cool and do it comfortably. So what we want to do is just to inspire others, whether it's even our competitors, to use more conscious practices and make more responsible products. But we're on an interesting time in fashion and consumerism in general, where larger companies are getting on board. They're getting on board and they're doing it in a way that uses trash and does it efficiently, adopts certifications like B Corp and involves charities. And that makes us happy ultimately, because we wanted to be part of that wave. And ultimately it makes the world a better place, and it's about the greater good.
Do you think there's a paradigm shift in consumer consciousness? Are consumers craving ethical products and fashion over fast fashion more so than ever?
Yeah, I think that, you know, in this next wave of consumerism, what we're finding is that consumers want to be more connected to the products and the brands that they're buying. And that can happen on multiple levels. But for me personally, as a consumer, I like to buy a shirt that I think is cool. I'm going to invest a little more money into it, and I'm going to just wear the hell out of it. I'm going to wear it till it's tatters and it feels good because it's a brand I really like. And if you choose the right product, it gets better with age. And that's true sustainability and is, you know, having a product that lasts. The other thing is consumers and touch points that consumers have, which has them choosing brands, is what they stand for. You know, it's a lot about the why and what they're connected to. And for Indosol, like we like to tell our story about repurposing tires and recycling them into footwear. But there's other parts of the brand that we hope people gravitate towards if they're not even into recycling. That might be, you know, responsible manufacturing practices. It might be aligning our colors with elements of nature, whether it be the shore, the beaches that we love to play in, the trees that we want to save and protect. So it's about adding more depth to brands in this next economy.
So you're kind of saying like people are craving more depth. They want authenticity?
Yeah, authenticity. I mean, if you buy three t-shirts for $19.99, you know, chances are that's a disposable item to you. You know, it's like you might lose it, you might leave it behind somewhere. It's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, I was like, you know, I only spent a few dollars on that. It's just getting more aligned with your products, having them have, you know, a bit more meaning to you.
Yeah, and it does. I think it does go much deeper than just what we're wearing. I think it does tap into this innate desire for us to be able to identify at a personal and moral level, and feel like we're part of something. And I think when I reflect upon it, I mean, that's what I do like in the products I buy. Like even this hat I'm wearing, it's a Thrasher hat. I mean, you know, you're in San Francisco. They're based in it. And for me, it's not about the brand. It's like, well, you know, it was one of the original skateboard magazines, and, you know, it taps into that whole subculture, and that's how I want to be identified as. So, yeah, I don't know. The psychology of it's pretty rad, man.
Yeah. I love that hat, by the way. Thrasher, it's an inspirational brand.
Yeah, they're big around – I mean, they're based in San Francisco. It's so cool. Love the skate scene over there in San Fran. It's just the best. So, listen, you grew up in Boston, did you say?
Yeah, near Boston, southern New Hampshire.
Yeah, so how would you reflect upon your time, early years in Boston as a child?
Yeah, it was pretty basic. I grew up just addicted to sports, you know, playing soccer. I played ice hockey. In baseball, you know, pretty standard American deal. We had heavy winters where I grew up in New Hampshire, so we get hammered with snow. And it was kind of my first business ever, was shoveling snow around the neighborhood. I had about 15 clients that were old people around the neighborhood, and I'd just go knock on their door and I'd shovel them out, and they'd give me like 10 bucks. But at the end of the day, I'd have like 150 bucks as a 12-year-old, and felt like a legit business to me, and I worked hard for it and earned a little bit of money. So I think that just going back, that was kind of my first business, really. It was a snow shoveling business. And when I got to, when I got to college, I had this quirky dude in one of my classes named Jake, and I didn't really know him that well, but at the end of a class one day, he said, "Hey man, what are you doing this summer?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know." He's like, "Hey, you want to come to Nantucket and work at the dump with me?" I was like, "Huh, what does that mean?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, me and my friends go and we work at a recycling facility in a dump in the summertime. It's like, it's a disgusting job, but we get $12 an hour and we get a free place to live for the summer. So I said, like, hell, why not? You know, like, we're not having anything for the summer. So I went over there to Nantucket and had the time of my life and worked the night shift at this recycling facility. And basically what we do is we'd sort through plastics. So all the islanders, it was one of the most sophisticated recycling plants of that time because it was a wealthy island. And we would sort through all the plastics and have them baled up and then shipped off the island to be recycling. And just being 20 years old, I had never had an experience about recycling. I didn't even know what recycling was leading, you know, going into that summer. So that was a really interesting experience because I never looked at a piece of plastic the same ever again after that summer because I learned about what recycling was. The following summer, I worked at a surf shop in Nantucket again, and I managed the reef sandal section. I became a salesman, and I was just sizing people up and putting sandals on their feet all day long, and got to understand that business and saw it running like a machine. And I remember saying to my boss, I was like, you know, man, you're making some serious money off of sandals, huh? Like, you know, two people came in today saying they just bought them 3 days ago and they already lost them. And they came back and bought another pair. So I thought that was really interesting just as far as a business model, and got to see how accessories and sandals sold at retail and be a part of it. And I really enjoyed it. And at the time I was just frothing over Reef as a brand. I thought they were the coolest brand I'd ever seen, and just their marketing campaign and their logo and all that. And just kind of got into it. And then those two experiences were really key for me leading up to my trip to Bali, which happened later in the future. Getting out of college, I worked an internship at New Balance athletic shoes in Boston, and then wasn't really feeling the corporate life. Just, I wasn't quite ready for it. So I threw everything in my car and I drove to Lake Tahoe, and I just went snowboarding for a few years, and just wanted to be, you know, in snow, and I wanted to live the Cali vibe. So that was nice. Yeah, that was just kind of my upbringing in a nutshell. But I've been in California now for about 20 years. So
amazing, dude. Yeah, I want to get back to your high school days. How would you describe those? Because high school can be a very interesting period. I know you've sort of given us a bit of a fast forward to your early 20s and your discovery of recycling and stuff like that. But when you're in high school, like you said, you're into sports and stuff like that. What kind of subjects were you drawn to? Like, what were the things that were interesting you as a teenager?
Yeah, I guess, first of all, from my high school days, I went to public school for 2 years, my freshman and sophomore year, and played soccer, played on the hockey team. And then my grades weren't so good. Just kind of got into just partying a little bit with my buddies and slacking off. And I wasn't very focused, wasn't really sure where I was heading. Long story short, I threw a big party at my parents' house when they were out of town when I was 16, and super fun party, but a bunch of stuff got broken and it wasn't that cool. My parents came home and they said, look, we're worried about you. We think you should go away to private school. We're going to send you to boarding school. So I said, great, let's do this. I did. I went to a boarding school called Proctor, and that really shaped me. That really changed the way I looked at things. And it just happened to be one of those schools that really pioneered composting and recycling and solar power energy. They were really a pioneer and kind of a natural movement at that school. It's kind of like a hippie boarding school where you get a good education.
Did they ask you to come back as a guest speaker years later?
I have done that.
The reason I asked that, really strange coincidence. A teacher that I used to work with, William O'Brien, said that you went back there as a guest speaker or something. Did you? Was he one of your teachers, William O'Brien? Do you remember him?
No.
I'm way off there. I'm way off. Forget it.
I was featured in their school magazine. It looks like that, but now I got to come in and do a Zoom with the class. So yeah, William might have been in the class, or he might have been a teacher that class actually. And they got to, you know, and they have full sustainability classes now. And that's very groundbreaking, you know, for a boarding school education, which traditionally was so uptight and was just all about the numbers and getting kids ready for college, but not as much about nature. It was
how do you feel though, Kyle, when you get asked to do these speaking engagements? Do you feel like it's a signpost of success or a directional? You're on the right directional trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm honored at every speaking engagement I get. I think that the draw is, you know, that IndoSoul is, and the development is an authentic story. It's a, you know, it's a basic kid. I didn't have any money. You know, we made it happen. You know, it was based off of a hope, a dream, and, you know, a travel to a foreign country. And then that led into, you know, starting the business off of a bank loan. Feel like it's one of those stories that is great for younger people coming out of high school, coming out of college, because it makes them realize that there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to do whatever they set their mind to do. And that's the story that I really like to tell and to talk about, you know, when it is, you know, directed towards the youth.
Do you feel like, I guess, do you feel a sense of responsibility now to maintain the original vision?
Yeah. I mean, you know,
maybe I'll elaborate a little bit more, like, because a lot of people are drawn to your story and they enjoy your story and it is inspirational. What does that do to you on a personal level? Does it give you more of a sense of conviction to keep going in the original direction?
Yeah.
How do you feel? Yeah.
Yeah. It pumps me up. You know, it has me feeling accomplished, even though at the financial bottom line there, you know, that's, if, you know, people had seen that over the years, they might be, like, wow, I don't know if I should be an entrepreneur. This seems crazy. But you know, again, it's the idea behind IndoSoul, and the reason why we started was to make a difference and to create a lifestyle that we could pass on to our consumers and to other people. So it really gets people thinking, and that as an accomplishment makes us feel really good.
Like, I guess when it comes to entrepreneurship, you know, and you've mentioned it a few times now, like, you know, finances are one of the main topics that come up, but is it really about finances? I mean, you said that you want to protect the environment and make environmental, you know, a paradigm shift in consumerism, stuff like that. But how much does finance actually weigh on you in terms of the vision? Because I know a lot of people get hung up on that aspect of it. Or do you feel like that the finances come as a byproduct of being on the right path?
Yeah. That's a great question. And if you ask my shareholders, they'd probably give you a different response than what I give you, because, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, to create a business, and especially if it's going to be a retail and consumer business, you have to make money. Otherwise it can't exist. And that's just, you know, the yin to the yang of it. But the reason why our shareholders have invested in IndoSoul goes beyond the potential financial return. It's like the people that have been attracted to the brand are, you know, they're believers in climate change and that it's real. They're, you know, humble people that wanted to support, you know, a young company making a difference and adding to, you know, the future of conscious consumerism, and whether it be fair trade labor practices. And like I said before, there's a lot of touch points within IndoSoul that attracts people to. Money just happens to be completely essential in the process of it. You know, and finally, after 11 years, you know, we've found an even keel and been able to manage the finances and have them balance with the story and the direction that we want everything to go.
How do you feel about being described as an activist?
Heavy. You know, I feel like the word activist is aggressive in my mind. It always makes me think about, you know, animal activists or, you know, but if you look at it in a different light, in the word active as a key root, I mean, that's the core part of the word, which I really gravitate towards, and, you know, Indo-Soul actively making a difference.
Do you feel like you've started a movement or you're part of a movement?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, maybe that's a better way. Activist sounds quite militant, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But pioneers, you know, pioneering a niche. And that's what we always set out to do, is to be able to pioneer a niche within footwear as a huge category. And we do feel we're accomplishing that.
If you could go back to, say, 20-year-old Kyle Parsons, what would you say to him?
Learn the numbers. You know,
let's be honest. I mean, sustainability can be incorporated to every aspect of our life, whether it's physical sustainability, you know, or then also your actual financial sustainability is something that needs to be, you know, considered. You can't be blind to that. You have to be realistic, right? Or pragmatic.
Yeah, exactly. Pragmatic is the best word. And, you know, 20-year-old Kyle would have gotten a pep talk and be like, yeah, man, you got to go for it. You got to just do what you believe in and follow your heart, but do your homework along the way and just make focused, conscious decisions as you go and break things into steps, you know, break it into levels and in milestones as you go. You can't do everything at once, right? You can't conquer the world and overnight. It's just, things need to have a systematic and pragmatic approach.
As that must have come with maturity now, I guess. You must be, looking at things.
As we get older and the gray hairs come in, just get a little more, think conservative and just maybe humbled as we go.
I'm just curious about, like you said, you mentioned your shareholders. I mean, are you, like I said, do you feel like you're attracting shareholders that are thinking beyond the financial and more about the cause and the helping the environment in general?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know it's delicate. It's always a delicate topic, but
the person that invests in IndoSoul might be different than the person that invests in, say, Facebook. They're obviously going to be, technology savvy person, but they're more about the greater good and the purpose and the cause. You know, and they're probably the kind of person too that will donate to saving the rainforest or saving the orangutans in Indonesia, or just getting involved with various causes. And we're thankful for attracting those kind of people.
Yeah, man. It's so good, bro. I love it. And like, I know we have just specifically talked a lot about IndoSoul, and usually I do want to get into, you know, you as a person, but it sort of seems to me like, you know, you've just lived and breathed this for a large part of your life. Like it just comes out in everything you're saying. So thanks for your, thanks for being so honest and upfront with it all. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Happy to.
Yeah. I guess like one last question I sort of want to ask you is, what's next? Like, you know, again, you started as a young entrepreneur with a dream and a vision, and you know, now 11 years later, like what's the future hold for you personally, or the brand, or life direction? Give us a bit of an insight.
Yeah, you know, as things evolve, it will still continue to make shoes and just kind of expand our global footprint. And we truly believe that every consumer, every person that touches IndoSoul, touches the product, ideally is going to spread the word and tell the next person, but they're also going to adopt, you know, that mentality in other areas of their life. And, you know, that may come out in different ways. So if you buy a pair of Indosoles, you think about saving a tire, maybe you're going to think about not buying a plastic water bottle from the supermarket. You're going to fill your own bottle and take it on the road with you. So just that for an example. For us, the next goal and something that we're working on right now is more circular economy based and with the idea of closing the loop, taking Indosol as a concept and a waste tire, making it into a pair of sandals, and you know what happens next after that life cycle. So we're in the process of teaming up with Bridgestone Tires, a huge tire company, pretty much the biggest right now. They're donating us truckloads of tires, and we're taking those tires that previously roamed the streets and we're turning them into sandals. And then on the back end of that deal is a nonprofit organization called Souls for Souls. And what they do is they put shoes on people that need shoes, and they also raise money, for disaster relief. For example, Indonesia is prone to natural disasters. There's tsunamis, there's earthquakes, there's all kinds of things, volcanoes. People get displaced from their homes, and Souls for Souls is one of those organizations that helps those people. So we are really excited about the idea of this three-way partnership, which goes around in a circle, right? So waste tire from Bridgestone turns into a pair of Indosole sandals. Pair of Indosole sandals goes to a person in need, and that kind of closes the loop. With amazing. That, so it's environmental, but it's also people helping people, and we love that.
Dude, amazing. Yeah. But like a company like Bridgestone must be so stoked that you're taking, like you're doing them a favor by taking those tires off their hands, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they have, like I said before, billions of tires end up each year all over the place. So there's a lot to spare.
There's an abundance of them, right? And again, like the potential seems vast to me, and I do struggle with why more companies aren't tapping into these resources as opposed to this monoculture that exists. And it seems like that there needs to be a real overhaul of the structures in place and the infrastructure and the processes that have been set for many, many years. And that's what I do like about you guys, you know, challenging those processes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's about challenging the system, right?
Dude, I love it. Listen, man, like it's so good, and I'm just so grateful for your time and tuning in, you know, with you from San Francisco. It's always a novelty to me. If I'm honest, I don't really like doing remote podcasts. So I don't often feel like I can connect with the guests as well as I would in person. But in this instance, man, like I could feel it through the computer screen, and I just appreciate your passion, dude. And I really feel like there's a lot of people that need to feel that. Now, I guess the last thing I want to hit you with is, like, I ask all guests to come to the show with a cause. Now, you just sort of mentioned Souls for Soul, but is there any other causes or charities or social enterprises that you'd like to support or advocate for?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in Bali, you know, in Indonesia in general, when we first started, there wasn't a lot going on as far as education around, waste products and the pollution problem. So we've been really grateful to have some help and support. And over in Bali, you know, Bye-Bye Plastic Bags would be an example of that. This other guy, a fine young gentleman named Gary Benchnib, and, you know, what he's done in Bali, and he's creating this amazing new project that that Kai is a part of, and that's going to be launching soon. And, you know, so, and then again, Souls for Souls as a huge organization that works with all the major footwear partners, and Indosole is fortunate to be in line with them. We also are super thankful to be a registered B Corp, because that was started by, you know, a really influential company called Patagonia, which everybody knows. And the fact that they spearheaded B Corp and became the first one inspired us to get on board. And it's just this really cool network of brands that are, you know, either environmentally or social mission focused. And
yeah. Do you mind if I ask what the criteria there is for the B Corp certification?
Yeah, there's for us, it was hard to achieve. You know, when we first got approved, it took us about a year of getting our ducks in the row. You know, it's anything from just, you know, having a recycling bin in your office. Okay, easy, check that one off. But when it gets to your practices, you know, your fair labor type practices at the manufacturing level, you know, that's where it gets pretty technical, and having specific contracts with your factory, which says that the workers aren't working, you know, more than 6 days a week, and they have reasonable work hours, that there's nobody under 18, they get health benefits, things of that nature, where just any responsible company that works with product or manufacturing should be following.
Amazing, dude. Amazing. Now, listen, I'll put links to these organizations such as Souls for Soul and Bye Bye Plastic Bags in Kyle's show notes. And you can find Kyle's show and the show notes and the links to those charities and enterprises via terriblehappytalks.com. And you'll also find links to the various platforms that this podcast is published, such as Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Buzzsprout, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio. So listen, Kyle, man, this is a tricky one for me. This is awkward, this part, because you guys have been like really supportive of me, specifically Kai Paul. You know, when I said I had a podcast, he was just straight on board with me and just wanted to support me from the very start. And have a gift for all guests, right? Okay. And you get a free pair of IndoSol footwear, dude. How do you feel? You get a free pair of footwear. So a big thanks to IndoSol. So you get a free pair of shoes. How do you feel?
Yeah, I feel phenomenal. I'm gonna add them to the collection.
This is awkward. The other gift, I have another gift for you, and you get the THT Circle logo sticker. I only give them to people that have been on the show, so you'll be episode number 80, bro. So I'm going to post that to you directly with your IndoSol shoes. And yeah, man, that's.
Congrats to you, too. 80 episodes, that's making it happen.
80 episodes in 80 weeks, brother. So I haven't missed a week. So I think I'm getting tired, hey.
You look great.
Yeah. No. So yeah, man. All right. Well, listen, bro, I guess that's it. And is there anything else you want to end on, or you're all good?
No, man, I'm good. And thanks to everybody for listening, and appreciate the support. And
all right.
There it is.
All right, insert fade out music. Crush Organics makes the best CBD oils and topicals. Go to crushorganics.com, that's crushorganics.com, and use code THT to get that epic 40% discount. It makes a huge difference. I advocate for CBD products because they've done so much for me physically and mentally. So really helps me post exercise with recovery, and it's also done loads for me in terms of getting me in really good sleep patterns and also reducing feelings of anxiety. So get on crushorganics.com. IndoSol Footwear have been a long time supporter of THT. They make footwear like sandals, flip-flops, slides from repurposed motor vehicle tires. So tires that would usually go into landfill, IndoSol get them, and they process them down and turn them into footwear that looks awesome. They're a B Corp certified company, which is the same company that Patagonia is certified by. And actually, Patagonia created that certification. So they do everything fair trade and ethically. They're a rad company, and I'm so stoked to be affiliated with them. So use code THT at indosol.com. That's IndoSole.com. Use the code THT, get the 15% discount, support THT,
and support conscious consumerism.